Hello, everybody. Welcome to Trapping Radio. I'm down in Muddy, Mississippi right now with Chip Davis, Meat Trapper, and Travis Johnson. And we're going to talk tonight about trapping like a monk, but not just any monk, a Russian monk. Before we get to that, let's talk about our sponsors. I want everybody to think about that when you're ordering supplies. These guys actually are the reason that we can keep doing Trapping Radio, so support the guys that support you. We have F&T out of Alpena, Michigan. Most of y'all know who they are. They have everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds. They have everything that you would want for about any, they're like Cabela's. I mean, they just pretty much have it. Then we have Jeff Dunlap, which is a good friend, which one of the subjects we're going to talk today. I'm glad Jeff is in an airplane and not in Mississippi with us today, so that'll go a little bit smoother. But he's from Dunlap Lures. He makes really, really good lures. We have Wildlife Control Supplies, which is, if you're doing any type of ADC or you need some custom type equipment because you're in a weird situation on a weird animal, they can take care of you. Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma, full supply house. Jeb's a great guy. He likes to horse trade. He buys fur. I think he's, do you know if he's buying fur this year, Chip?
I think so.
So I think he's a fur buyer. He sells a lot of meat. So he's somebody you want to keep on your radar. And Funky Trap Tags and Supplies, which is also the sponsor of the rant. Alan up there in Ohio is doing a great job getting products out to everybody. Super guy. But if you're going to buy products, you enjoy listening to Trapping Radio, give those guys a shot. Now, before we get into this, I want to talk about a subject that you already look nervous on, Chip. Because I don't pay that much attention to a lot of things, I think, I'm not quite sure how to start this, but the NTA wants to be on Facebook, which I think is a smart play. That's where a lot of people are. And they have a Facebook page, and then they had a group. And the group was the NTA Fur Shed, which to me makes sense that you would want to have the National Trappers Association in any type of title. So if you start getting too nervous, start giving me the throat slash and we'll go somewhere else. But then all of a sudden, out of the blue, they changed it to almost mimic. And I know they're going to have plausible deniability and they're going to say this isn't true, but I don't believe it. The biggest platform on Facebook for trappers is Jeff Dunlap's Trapping Talk. 41,000, four times the NTA, is Jeff's group. And then all of a sudden they changed the NTA Fur Shed to Trap Talk, which I wish the president of the NTA would have listened to the show last time with me and Jeff when we talk about copycat, because I truly believe there's two things happening. That was the last poke before somebody gets out of office, and I think that was a way to try to gain extra members by maybe being a little bit confusing and getting too close to Jeff's group. But the reason I'm bringing this up, there's an election this year at the NTA. John Daniels is from Tennessee. John Daniels is running for president of the NTA. And John Daniels, not in a generic, normal type way of being the president of Tennessee Fur Harvesters, because of John, we now can set body grips in the water for 72 hours, which is huge. We don't have to use the rubber jaw traps anymore as long as they're offset. He's done a lot of things like that. So he's very pro-action. And people are going to argue back and forth whether the NTA and McAllister was trying to get one last jab at Jeff, which I think he was. But I do believe that when John is president, because the John that I know would never allow this to happen. And if there was confusion, I believe John has the integrity to change that once that was brought up to his attention, because not everybody's going to know everything. Because I think John would support people that are members in the NTA like Jeff is, and it would just go away. So Any comments on what I just said?
I was struck by the fact when you look at the numbers of how many people are in Jeff's group mm-hmm. versus how many members the NTA has. There's a huge disparity there. And to me, that tells me that that organization has a lot of room that they need to grow into. Mm-hmm. If you can have 40,000 trappers in a Facebook group and you've only got less than 10,000 members, mm-hmm. there's a disparagence there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to me, that's just a red flag about the organization as a whole, as far as its state.
Well, to me, what makes it more confusing, the reason I think it was a last jab, is marketing 101 is if you're a nonprofit the way the NTA does, you want to have as much branding power within that group as you can. The NTA First Shed, you may not know what the NTA is, but you'll look at it. But just from a marketing point of view, if you go at it from just a general name, especially when you get so close to one of your members, I don't see the advantage from them doing that as far as branding the NTA, because if a lot of people don't know what they are, what yeah. they do, or anything like that. So if it's a group and there's stuff going on and people want to be a part of it, I think it should be, I mean, if I was going to start a group, it would be Predator Control Group, Facebook group, or whatever you call it, things, yeah. or Wolfer Nation, or Trapping Radio, or...
Instead of trying to start a competing group, I mean, why not tap into the group that's already there, that already mm-hmm. has 40,000 members, mm-hmm. and work with that group, sponsor that group, run ads on that group's pages, and be a part of that group, instead of trying to, you know, copycat it. Mm-hmm. I mean...
Yeah, so, I just don't get it.
I don't, yeah.
I was really flustered, and I'm hopefully, like I said, just because I know John and how much actual real stuff he's done in Tennessee, that hopefully after July we won't have to worry about stuff like this. And you're just being quiet. That's okay. I didn't know you could be quiet, but you're doing okay.
That's a first for Chip.
It is. It is. And you know, and talking about the NTA is a razor's edge.
Yeah.
They do a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
Especially the legal stuff they do. It's great. But at the same time, I think sometimes organizations have a tendency where it's the iron law of bureaucracy, where it turns about the organization, not about the original mission. The yeah. original mission is trappers, not the organization.
Do they have an office of social media or a director of social media at the NTA?
Chip would know that. They didn't when I was director.
Not that I'm aware of, as far as a specific office there. I mean, well, they obviously have staff that some people are under.
I mean, if you look at any corporation today, you look at any major bank, any major manufacturer, they all have directors of social media that handle all the Facebook, the tweets, and, you know, putting that image out there and managing stuff when there's an industrial accident or something goes bad or somebody gets hacked. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all that's their job. You know, and to me, when you have an organization that's in trapping, which is as controversial as trapping is these days, that to me, that's a no-brainer, is to put somebody in charge of the social media strategy and the platforms.
And this probably wouldn't have happened if they would have had
a coherent strategy.
Yeah.
You know.
Are you volunteering too?
I don't think they would appreciate some of my material, but but hey, I'm here. I'm available.
To me, it was sad that happened. And because I love what Jeff did. I'll be honest with you. I think what Jeff did proved the point.
Yep.
Him or one of the members of Trapping Talk opened a group that was the National Trappers Association. And apparently, the NTA did not like that. I mean, fair is fair, right? You know, they took it down, but I think they proved the point a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope it gets straightened out. you know, and if you like Jeff or, you know, cause I mean, we're a group, guys. If you haven't figured that out, there's 8 or 10 of us. We're really, really tight and we always have each other's backs. And if you understand that and you appreciate that, you know, I would suggest that you email or call the MTA and tell them to do the right thing on this, you know, and just let them know that there's people out there that don't appreciate it. I mean, that's what I'm doing right now, saying I don't appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So, any more on that? You're so glad to get off this topic.
Let's talk about Russian Monk.
Okay. One of my weird readings that I do, and I can't explain why I read some of the books that I read, but it was about a guy that was getting overwhelmed with technology from the phones, the computers. He ran a company and he felt like his life was getting completely out of control and it was just flying apart at rapid speed. So he had this brilliant idea that he was gonna go somewhere where he was gonna learn how to be at peace without action. And he found a monastery in Russia, which I didn't even know that there were such things as Russian monks, but apparently there are. And it's like an old medieval type monastery. So you have a room, you have a bed, you have a candle, and you have whatever that religion is that they're studying. That's all that's in the room. There's no electronics, there's no nothing. So when you go to the room, you can sleep, you can pray, or you can read. That's the only options, or stare out the window. And while he was there, he had a hard time with it for the first couple of weeks, but they had this big meeting where a bunch of people came in. It's probably how they raised money. They did a dinner. And it was his job, because he was the newbie, to wash the dishes. And there was like 1,000 dishes he had to wash by hand. No dishwasher, no commercial kitchen, no anything. And he was really frustrated. Like, apparently throwing a hissy fit frustrated. Well, one of the monks comes over, and all monkish-like, and goes, "What's wrong?" And I just hear it in Yoda voice, but I know that's probably not what it was.
He said monkish-like.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, "Well, what's wrong?" He goes, "I've got all these dishes. I'm never going to get done with all of these dishes." And the monk basically said, "You need to learn to live in the moment. You only have one dish to wash. It's the dish that's right in front of you. Concentrate on that dish, not the 999 other ones that's sitting over here, but just that one dish. And they'll take care of themselves if you take care of the one." And I've been thinking about how to do this for a show, because I think that's important. I know in my personal trapping, especially when it comes sometimes to snares, or if I'm doing raccoons, or we first get to a job somewhere, you're not focused on the one, you're focused on the many. Mm-hmm. So you rush through things you shouldn't, because you're not focused on the dirt hole you're making now, or the snare you're putting in the fence. You're 10 sets down the thing. You're worried about where you're going. How many are we going to get in today? All this type stuff. But if we focused on that one, I think we'd be much better trappers. Instead of, I've got to get 60 traps out by 3 o'clock this afternoon. I've got to have 100 snares in the fence. I've got to get this 20,000 acres wrapped up in snares or whatever it is. It's one at a time. If you slow down, you focused on that, you're in that moment right there, you blocked out what you're going to be doing next, I think you'd be a tremendously better trapper. So that's what I'm bringing to the table for y'all two to explain, because y'all have never heard it before. So go.
I love the idea. I mean, it's a conceptual thing that, And this is what you're so good at, and to all of us on Trap Radio, is bring these ideas up that you put in our laps and we think about it. And that's where I applaud you so much on what you do. And this is another great example of that. And I find this to be true. As you're describing that scenario and that situation, I think back to my own personal trapping, and you know, it's been so soggy wet here this year. We hadn't been trapping like we'd like to or usually do, but gosh, you guys have been here almost 24 hours and we probably had 3.5 inches of rainfall. And this is typical of every other day.
I haven't seen any rain. Have you seen any rain, Tim?
I couldn't see. There was all this water going sideways by the window. I couldn't see out the window to see if it was raining.
But the point of the matter is yeah, there's 400 traps up here in the shed. And I've got a little work I need to do on quite a few of them. And why have, since we've not been trapping as hard, why hadn't I got that done? And I've asked before I heard this concept. This is in the last, literally in the last several days, week. I said, if we're not going to be setting them, I at least need to go be adjusting my pan tensions. I've got some, you know, some rust stuff I need to address. I got two or three things I need to get cleaned up here. But I got 400 of them up there. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, if I had one, that's no big deal. I can go do that one. And if I get done with that one, I can go do one more. Mm-hmm. That's not a big deal. But to think of that house full of traps with 400 traps in there, and I got, so I completely embraced the mindset. That's the way my mind was going as you were explaining that. So.
Yeah, I even took a step back out of trapping, just thinking about life in general. You know, like right now, here I am in Mississippi and we're going to be doing some hunting and what have you. And then I've got to drive home and then I've got to turn around and I've got to go down to Birmingham for business and I've got meetings down there in Birmingham. And so I'm already into next week mentally. I'm already worried about what I've got to do, when I've got to be there, what my schedule is going to be on a daily basis. In other words, I'm not even thinking about what I'm doing right here, right now. I'm worried about something in next Wednesday and next Thursday. And that's crazy. You know, I mean, how can you enjoy what you're doing or even do a halfway decent job at what you're doing right now if your mind is a week and a half down the road?
I think you even get into that in daily life, too. Just use this trip, for example. Now, for the guys who are listening, I absolutely love when I have the opportunity to do what we're doing right now, just hang out with our brothers. That's what I look forward to this trip. Many of you have heard, we typically do a show. This is third or fourth year we've been doing this, and I love hanging out
here. I wish Carl was here, but
yeah,
he's being too lazy and not left yet.
Yeah, Carl's on his way, I think. I don't know about at the moment. But
he's practicing his belly dancing.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, Carl the belly dancer.
Oh, is he bringing his outboard motor or is he driving?
But I guess my point is, you know, I've kind of got this thing laid out just because it is here at my place. And obviously we want to show you guys a good time. But, you know, we had a pretty cool meal last night that Bailey smoked a old piece of dead cow. And it turned out pretty good, and we were going to get up early this morning. We were going to go to one of our farms and deer hunt, and it was still raining all the way up well past the time we could have got all that in. So, you know, and I kind of found myself fretting about that a little bit. Here, these guys drove all this way, and we're not able to hunt, and there's not anything I can do about it because I can't turn the water off here. You know,
we're so stressed.
But here's the result of that, though. Because we didn't go hunt, and my mind was there, we're about to go shoot some big old does here in just a few minutes, and we're fixing to lay some down, but and we are recording this. This is, most everybody listening to this at night, so we're recording this a little afternoon today. So. But having said that...
Are the batteries in the thermal scope, Tim?
I don't know, but I've got my undetected.
So as a result of that, we had breakfast this morning, and Tim went up to his room to shower and actually wound up, I think, taking a nap. What that gave Clint an opportunity to sit there and visit for a couple of hours this morning. And as we just sat there and talked, we talked about two or three other ideas for products that, as we bounced them, and like Clint and I always do, but these are some really outstanding ones. We got two of them that are going to come to market. I mean, this just makes no sense not to. And a lot of these where we were talking about a subject, and that idea came up, and we bounced that idea off, and we would have never done that had we been in a deer stand somewhere, even if we would have had a successful hunt and harvested some meat and all that. But so, because I was so focused on all this other stuff, you know, tomorrow we're going to a club, we're going to turn loose some birds and maybe bird hunt some and different things. And the more I allowed my mind, when I allowed my mind to think a lot further along, I would have missed a really good opportunity that's about to happen. You guys will see a couple of new products at shows this coming year that were literally, and the initial thought was this morning, sitting in my living room. So.
Well, I mean, with the book, the thing that because it's so strange with our lifestyle today, but the way the monks were explaining this stuff was, when you sleep well. When you get up in the morning, they prayed because they're monks, and they would get on their knees and they would pray, and they would pray like it's the last prayer they ever had. And they would clean their room, but they wanted it to be the best cleaning that it's ever happened. I don't know what you clean when you got nothing in there, but apparently they clean it. And then they go cook breakfast, and they were like focused on only breakfast at that time, and you know, meditation or fellowship plus making the breakfast, and they would do the farming stuff. But they broke every single thing down where they trained themselves to be, because like what you're saying this morning, if we were, you know, I'm over there soling up because, you know, I want to have so many back straps in the coolers when I leave. Mm-hmm. We would have been in that moment, which there's nothing we could do about it unless we just want to be absolutely miserable. But once we started talking, we were in that moment, you know, and then tonight, if you're thinking about having to go all the driving and, you know, you're not going to enjoy the rain running down the back of your neck like you should, or, you know, or whatever else, you know, it's almost like we didn't even know how anymore to live. You know, bring that back to trapping. I think when you're looking at, like, don't try to catch 100 coyotes. Mm-hmm. When you're making that set, it is this set for this coyote on this location. And you concentrate and you think about that. And that's the only thing you think about.
Let's take that even one step further, because this is something that we've had firsthand experience with this morning too. For Christmas, we got one of the, I believe they call them covert cameras. It's basically a cell phone camera. And I said, I've got a very small line out of this. The dozen or so traps is all I've got out right now. But I put a camera on one, and I put that cell phone camera on there. And it's actually set up on a bobcat box is what it's set up on. Last night we were sitting around visiting, we had a coyote walk through there. And this morning, only the second one I've seen in probably the last 20 years, we had a red fox walk right in front of that box. Now, the boxes weren't particularly set for, you know, for fox or coyotes. It's probably a poor choice of equipment for that particular, especially for a coyote. But let's just look at that one set. I've got 11 other ones out there. Mm-hmm. But I know within the last 24 hours, I've had a coyote and a red fox walk right through there. I'm kind of thinking that, you know, now that I got that information, looking at that one single set, forget about the other 11, I may need to go put some steel in the ground, a foothold trap. Mm-hmm. May need to pop a dirt hole in the side of that bank where I can drain the water out of the back of it because there's a hollow right there, or put in a flat set or whatever it is. But let's just focus on that one particular set now. And I believe that there's a lot of things that we can do reactionary based on what we're seeing on this camera footage that's popping in every few minutes when another critter walks by there. That could be a, here again, it's living in the moment, focusing on one thing at a time.
Well, because, I mean, what I'm visualizing, what probably normally happens, and y'all tell me if I'm wrong, because I think this does, even if you saw the coyote with your camera and the red fox, and you've got 11 sets out, there's a coyote and a red fox running around. I need to go put out more traps. So what do? You leave there to go extend that somewhere else, instead of focusing just on that, and you extend that out instead of, you
know, absolutely,
because the old woofers, when you really study them, I think what made them so good is they had a male or female or both killing sheep, and it wasn't trying to set out 1,000 traps. they had to focus on how are they getting here? How far away can I set? Why aren't they messing with the traps inside the sheep? How are they leaving? Are they taking it with them? If they're taking it back, I know that I've got a coyote den, you know, then I've got to figure out where that's at so I can take. I mean, that's think about the focus on a coyote or a pair of coyotes from the way that we, you know, we ratchet the shotgun and just blast the bird shot out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're focused on a line or an area or putting out traps and not on the animal. You know, it's all about, you know, how many snares do I have? How many snares do I need to cover this beaver swamp? You know, it's not.
So it's not just me.
Yeah.
That thinks that way.
Yeah. It's, you know, you're looking at the big picture and everything, and you're forgetting about, well, what I'm trying to do is catch a beaver that made this sign right here. You know, which is what we're talking about. Okay, here's sign. How am I going to catch this one? Not how am I going to set the whole swamp up?
Or to me, I love the trap. I love to set traps, I love to catch animals, I love everything about it. But where I have the absolute most fun trapping, here's a good example, because I just, life happens, you get so busy, I hadn't had a chance to have big lines like I love to have and love to get set up, except for the last 2 years, except for over where we are on a trip that we'll be on a little later over in Arkansas. When we're there 14 days straight, all the way through. And we start off and we're just coyote trapping, or at least that's my little section of that. Everybody's got their own section of what they do there. I'm just starting off coyote trapping. About halfway through there, we've got a lot of coyotes already caught off that thing. The last 3 or 4 days, especially each of the last couple of years, we're down to a pair of coyotes. And that's all the tracks that we're seeing. We're focused on those two. That can be a frustrating thing. Tim, I know you've seen this in your predator control work, or not predator control work, but your beaver control work. You get down to that last beaver. It can be a frustrating thing, but to me, that's the most fun that I have in trapping, because you're focused on one single animal.
That's when you're really paying attention to what you're doing.
Absolutely. And when you're successful on that, that's also the most rewarding catches I think I have.
I agree. Because when I go into a fresh beaver swamp, you know, I'm looking for channels or whatever, and I'm just going to put, you know, two snares in each channel. There's another channel over there. I'm not looking at the animal, you know. But you're exactly right. When it comes down to, you know, a lake job or something, and I've got one beaver that's still coming up and cutting rose bushes down, you know, I'm looking for every track and every piece of sign that I can of where he's coming, how he's coming, and how he avoided, you know, stepping in that trap. And that's really what it's all about.
Well, I've heard you, Clint, allude to the same thing with cats in Texas. I mean, you kind of shotgun, you know, you're picking up cats left and right the first several days, first week or two. But when you get down toward the end and you've already thinned these out, I've heard you speak of that even on Trapper Radio before, where that's just a...
Well, the thing down there, and it is, you have to, when you first get there, you have the advantage of the fence. So you get all the snares in the fence, you'll pick up a certain amount of cats. And normally someone else is doing that. Then I'm putting out foothold traps. And you go to the places that you historically have always done good in the pastures, and you're popping those things in. But you are kind of doing it mindlessly. And then what happens towards the end of this, you know, you're not seeing a whole lot. You start paying attention. Even on those ranches, some of those that I've been on, I mean, you got to think, a year of my life on Lamadare, at least, if not more than that, a year of my life has been on Lamadare. I still find new draws and big washout gullies and features in the land that I've never seen. Or I start looking and then I start seeing, you know, I think the cat should be crossing down there, but the cats are actually crossing right here. Well, but until that focus comes, you're just, you know, doing the same thing over and over again. But it's, you know, it's just one of those things. I think what appealed to me about this, it's the perception.
Yeah.
The perception of finding joy in making that set and catching that coyote is like anything else in life. Most people, like, that don't like their jobs, if you reframe that, most people will start liking their jobs. Mm-hmm. Or if you're not having a good marriage, if you refrain how you think about your partner, okay, you know, like you're married to a guy and he farts all night and, you know, he only wants to take a bath once a week and, you know, this and the other. But he's really good, a really good dad, and he's a really good provider. But you only focus on the provider and the good dad, but you just, you know, don't focus on the farting and the body odor. You'll look at that husband or wife, whatever mm-hmm. it is, it's all perception. It's your personal or perspective. That's a mm-hmm. better word, perspective. So when that perspective changes, you grow fond of that person you were frustrated with a week ago. Mm-hmm. You know, there's... And I've heard the same thing on jobs where people go in and they get people to see their jobs in a totally different way. And in a month, the people are like, I love my job. You know, mm-hmm. and a month before, they're like, can I just kill myself, please? Same work, same people, mm-hmm. same place. Mm-hmm. Their perspective have changed. And the perspective of thinking about everything individually instead of group, you know, that's the reason capitalism works. Socialism sucks. Mm-hmm. It just don't work that way. Because you're always worried about all, you just get lost in the minutia.
I know, I saw the same thing as far as jobs and work goes, is when I was farming, I could walk out my front porch, and of course I lived right there, my shop was 100 yards from my house at the time, and I walk off my front porch, and I could see 10,000 different things that needed attention. And it literally, I mean, it got to where it changed my whole life, it changed my mm-hmm. outlook, I mean, that's the first thing in the morning. And you have these negative mm-hmm. thought processes, or you want to call it negative vibes or whatever, and it affected me not only that day. I honestly think it affected me for several years there. And, you know, and we're not in that business anymore, but I'm telling you, that stress of that, and it's not, if I would have focused on the one single task at hand instead of all the mm-hmm. thousands of things, well, that piece of equipment's got a flat on it. I've got to order that seed, and we've got to start planting here, mm-hmm. but we've got to drain water off this field, and we've got to do this, and we got to that, and we got to this, mm-hmm. and we got, and all of a sudden it's, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. Yeah. I'm going to Birmingham. I start a contract for a client that's a 6-month contract, and I have 2 days of meetings where I'm supposed to be putting together a project plan to direct the activities of 4 programmers every single day for the next 6 months. Exactly what are they going to be doing and how much are they going to do every day for the next 6 months. And that the idea that you can predict that or control that is ludicrous, and that generates a tremendous amount of stress that I have to come up with a plan that will succeed when I know for a fact there is no way to do that. We simply are going to have to work through things as they come up. And so that's an extremely stressful, and it's the same thing you're talking about. You know, you walk out the door, you look, and there's 10,000 things. You know, so I'm sitting here in Mississippi, and I'm stressed because I've got to come up with a plan for the next 6 months for 4 separate guys. And what I have to do is just take a deep breath and say, okay, I'm just going to walk in the office in the morning, and we're going to handle it as it comes. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what happens, happens, you know.
That's realistic. Or yeah. You could have plan A and just come up with all your stuff and go, our plan B, real world, where yeah. you have to just continue on what we did the day before.
Exactly. So, you know, I'll come up with a plan, turn it in to keep the suits happy, and then we'll sit down every morning and get to work.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can tell you from... You always hear that the teacher comes when the student is ready. You know, mm-hmm. they mm-hmm. even sounds more monkish than everything else we said. But I've heard that over and over from different people. When me and Travis was trying to get, I mean, there was a stretch this summer where wholesale orders for conventions were stacking up, and they were really big orders. Mm. And then I knew I'm running to a show this week, and we're shoved everything we can get on a vehicle to get to this show. And my brain is automatically kicking over to how are we gonna do this? But really, I'm 3 shows out. What helped me when I read that was when I went in the shop, I go, we're gonna make Hat Collector. I'm not thinking about bait solution. I'm not thinking about, did the bottles come in for the primal paste bait yet? I'm not thinking about, how come the lady hadn't made my labels yet for this other lure that I need 2 days from now? I focused totally on the Cat Collector. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that it made my world a complete difference in, because I was getting pretty rattled, because it was just like I'm swimming into a turbine and I can't outswim. But when I started focusing on that one thing, it was all manageable at that time.
And at the end of the day, regardless if you're talking about your job, your occupation, or your trap line, or your hunting, or any pick a subject, your marriage, whatever, you've only got so many hours. You can only do so much. And the focus of that brings it all in. None of this is saying, you know, that monk eventually got to that 999th plate, and he had one more to go, and he was completely done. But he couldn't have worked any harder. What we're saying is not work. We're saying focus on your work, focus on your trapping, focus on your that aspect that's giving you trouble at that time, because you still only have 24 hours in a day. You can still only work a certain percentage of those hours, but I think that your efficiency goes through the roof when you look at one instead of look at the whole.
Because otherwise, if you look at the whole, you get analysis paralysis, and you end up not doing anything. You know, I've got a friend that is pretty ADD, and it's very frustrating to go backpacking or camping with him, because in the morning, all of our gear scattered around, and I'll get up and I'll start packing up, and I'll be all packed up, and he hasn't packed a single item in his pack yet, because he's standing there looking at all of this stuff that he's got to do, and he can't decide to go do the first thing, you know. And so I'm already done, because I did one thing at a time. I folded the tent, I packed it up, and then I folded the sleeping bag, and then I packed that up. And he's saying, oh crap, look at all of this stuff I've got to do. And it's like he can't get started because he's looking at the big picture.
Did I mention I had 400 traps up there in the trap?
I had an email from losing the weight from being 330 pounds. I had an email from a guy one time, and I wish I'd have read this book before that, because I really didn't know what to say, because I felt for him. He was close to 400 pounds, trapper, and he was wanting to lose weight. And I ended up calling him, but what it was like what you're saying, you know, his doctor's saying he needed to be like, it was ridiculous to put this in his head, but it was like 180 pounds or something. So you're talking, it's 220, am I doing my math? 220 pounds. And he's all he could focus on was that
big number.
200. How do you lose 200? That's a freaking grown man. That's what he kept saying. I got to lose a grown man. How am I going to lose to? And he just focused and focused and focused. When you look at it this way, it's
you got to lose 1 pound.
1 pound.
I got to lose that 1 pound. And then I got to just do that 1 pound over and over.
Yeah, and then it's not near as scary, you know, as far as doing that. But, you know, like with flat sets, if you're focused on that flat set, you're probably going to have a much blended trap than you ever had before.
Absolutely.
You know, or when it comes to the right spot at a, you know, at a macro location or something. You're gonna, if you're totally focused, if you're looking at this ridge and you're looking at that ridge at the same time, at least my brain don't know how to separate those two. And you're just running through there.
Yeah. Or even down to a location, which, you know, if you want to even go deeper into the trapping, you know, that's something I still to this day, you know, trap for years, and I'll pull up to a location and that's a good spot right there, that's a good spot right there, and there's a good spot right there. And so, you know, I mean, sometimes you got to pick the best good spot. So
well,
that's true, man. I mean, it's a weird subject, and I don't even know how much time we've done, because I don't know what else really to 440
minutes. So I do love the topic. That's it's got so many applications and so many life lessons that we can. I think it helps our trapping. I think it helps our relationships. You know, with our spouses. I think it helps our careers. I think that whole mindset can go a lot of different angles in a lot of different ways. But the truth is, when you simplify, you know, it's that stack of dishes gets smaller.
Well, did you ever mention something happened where I missed your simplification podcast? So I didn't get to hear it.
Yeah, I was just basically talking about whittling down the excess extraneous stuff out of your life, whether it's, you know, trapping gadgets, mm-hmm. you know, or what have you, you know, or camping or backpacking gadgets. I mean, one of the things that I do when I go backpacking, and it never ceases to amaze me, is when I get back, I make a note of stuff that I never took out of my pack. And mm-hmm. you can do this on your trap line, stuff that you never touched, but you always throw it in the back of the truck or whatever, because you might need this, you might need that. And then the clutter builds up, and then it just becomes a chore. Whereas, you know, that's, you know, I've gotten rid of almost all of my traps except snares. I'm just, you know, and then with snares, I've done away with pre-made supports. So I'm down to where I carry a bag of snares that are pre-rigged with my extension cables and an earth anchor and a quick link on them. And then I have my coil of wire, and I have my pliers, and I have a driver in the lure.
But you didn't go into the example of the hanging the deer in the tree to snare a deer?
No,
I didn't. You see, to me, that is like a perfect example.
Or no gravity engines either.
Yeah, I mean, there was. I did a video, and it was just a survival how-to, you know, zombies show up in apocalypse or whatever. You need to snare deer. How you do it? You know, basically, it's a bigger coyote snare. It's more off the ground. It's on a deer trail.
Yeah.
Super simple. I get an email and going, no, you don't know how to do this right. And the guy said, first off, you need to go within a mile of where you're at and steal everybody's mineral blocks. And then you bring them to one place in the thickest part of the woods that no one will ever find them. And I'm thinking, if you didn't get shot stealing the mineral block, but you bring it there. And then you get the deer coming there, and you figure out a way to come in where they can't smell you. And then you go find an apple, which I'm thinking in the apocalypse is going to be hard to come by. And you hang it in a tree because he's seen deer get on their back legs and pull an apple off a tree, which is true.
Yeah.
And then you're going to figure out how to set the snare, because he didn't go into that little small detail of this thing, where it's going to be sitting perpendicular to the ground. So instead of up and down the way we do it, sitting straight up there, where you know how the deer is going to get off his back feet, reach up and grab the apple, and as he's coming down with the apple, he'll close the deer on his...
But I mean, I saw the picture. You sent me the picture. It got even more complicated. That wasn't a pulley system and a gravity engine. And
well, that was yours.
That was my. That was yours. Okay.
Yeah. Snaring the squirrel.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, you talking about not focusing on the problem at hand.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like deer hunting. You know, I went into examples about archery, you know, and how you can go way off the deep end and stuff with hunting gear. You know, we're fixing to head out and do some hunting. I'm going to carry my rifle, some extra rounds of ammunition, and my jacket. You know, I'm not going to have bleat calls. I'm not going to have a grunt tube. I'm not going to have, you know, all of this stuff that when I was younger... Man, I was commando ready. I had, you know, you had your LBE gear on, and you had everything pre-positioned, you know, and then, you know, I would come back and there would be some redneck that had killed a deer sitting up in a tree smoking a cigarette with Carhartt coveralls on that had oil on them from the job site, because he knew where the deer traveled and he knew which way the wind
still
was blowing.
Had bacon biscuits in his beard.
Yeah, and he would sit up there smoke a cigarette and kill the deer. You know, it's because he got back to basics. He knew deer are going to travel through here at this time. The wind's going to be in my face, so they're not going to be, you know, winding me. And I'm going to sit up here and stay warm and, you know, enjoy myself, and I'll shoot the deer when he comes by.
See, I think if you focus on what the issue is, which is, say, like in deer hunting, and you just focus on that and you let all this stuff fall away, you'll get to simplicity.
Yeah.
And I think part of that, which I guess we can finish up the show with this, is I remember one time that I was in a canoe in Marin County when I was doing the stuff for the county, and the only way I could get without just killing myself for my vehicle was going on the Squatchy River in a canoe to get on the backside of this property because it was really wet. The water came down in the thing. And when I left, the water was perfect. Everything's going right. And I remember coming around this bend and I've never seen a log jam like this. And the banks were 10, 12 feet straight up, solid mud. There's no way I was going to port that canoe without killing myself. And these were trees. Mm-hmm. I mean, these were big trees. And they were like a big beaver dam, but straight up. And I remember sitting there looking at that. I'm 4 miles back up current to get back to where the truck is at. I'm 4 miles to get down to where I'm going to be picked up at. And I've got this sheer wall on both sides and these great big things on there. And I remember just going, oh, crap. You know, and you got all the gear in there. Mm-hmm. It's not just a canoe out paddling. And I remember sitting there and going, you know, I was started, you know, like this sucks and this, that, and the other. And I remember making a conscious decision. This is a problem that I can figure out. And this is a problem that I'm going to learn from. And as I kind of, I mean, I was giving myself this prep talk. Before that was over with, I actually enjoyed this problem that was in front of me. And I did mm-hmm. it for several days in a row to get mm-hmm. that through there. Mm-hmm. I did almost break my leg. But besides that, it was really good. You know, but I mean, it was like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, since we're talking about mental, when you come up to problems, you have two things. You can either get down about it, or you can make the conscious decision to go, this could be a really cool learning experience, you know, for something else down the road. Mm-hmm. You know, and that goes with trapping or anything else. But mm-hmm. I think that's a perspective type thing. And when I find myself getting frustrated now, I try to go back to that moment. I ain't saying I always do it, but, you know, just where I'm in control of my emotions in this situation.
Right.
Where it can be enjoyable again, because you're out. We go out there today and we're 1,000 acres in and the jack truck, you know, just four wheels fall off of it and we're up and, you know, we're not going to. But I mean, it's going to suck to walk out of that mud because mm-hmm. it's so far in there. We can either just get mad and sold up and everything, or we can try to figure out some way to make it enjoyable.
I'm not going to open my mouth after what I did to the Mississippi State Bulldogs and shit. And just so people know, when the Bulldogs were playing Iowa State in the bowl game, they were up and they were winning. And I texted Chip and I said, man, y'all are doing great. And about 25 seconds after I sent that text, the Iowa State scored a touchdown and just started running. And every time I'd say, well, that was a good play, and then they would fumble. And so he texted me back. He said, would you just shut up?
Oh, man. Well, if we do get stuck or the mini truck quits today, then at least we'll have Travis and Bailey. They're a lot younger and better shape than we are. So,
yeah, but I mean, you might find the mother load of bobcat trails.
That's right. Absolutely. Exactly.
I think it's just a lot of that's mental.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Tim, you were saying that you got a new knife coming out.
Yes. I have partnered up with MuskratMan.com, MuskratMan Knives. And he is a true craftsman. The guy does incredible work. If you're watching my channel, you've seen some of the hatchets that he's made for me, some of the leather work that he's done. And we've got three blades coming out. One is a scalpel blade that uses the Meat Trapper Skinner handle. Another is a pelting knife, a pure trapping pelting knife that uses the Meat Trapper handle. And then the third is a new knife that you'll just have to wait till this spring to see, but it's going to be special.
For you non-survivalist, pelting knife is a skinny knife for fur. Now, as we're closing up, I want to let everybody know, if you go to my store and you go to the Deer, Hog, and Bear, or however I've got that up there, Mr. Travis Johnson, which is sitting right here, has now got the two deer products that he's been working so hard up there. One is called Undetected, and one is called Hypnotized, and we were kind of talking with him about this last night. So stand up, young man, stand up. We got him in a tuxedo. In 10 seconds, explain Undetected.
Undetected is a scent cover that also attracts deer.
Good. So that's one of his products. And then he has Hypnotized, which is a really unique, and it's doing really good on testing, which is a corn additive to really get your deer doing what you want them to do to get them in the place you need them. So if you're interested in that, he's got that on the store. You can also get his products from Hilltop Outdoors and Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Anything else?
Sounds great.
I'm gonna test it out today.
Yep.
I drank it last night, so there ain't nothing left for you. All right, guys. We'll see y'all next week.